Blog Talk Radio. today, we are centering ourselves in our topic for the month. As you know, inner healers is a worldwide concept which has been designed to help people understand that healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to lead a happy and healthy life. My name is Luciana Stiglich. I'm an integrative healer and a teacher. I also brought the concept of inner healing to Peru, and I'm the host for the show today. Today we have a very special guest. As our topic for the month is love, and it being a so wide a topic, we have separated the different subtopics into different weeks. So today we will be talking about relationships and how relationships help us achieve love and help us live love through our relating with others. Our guest for today is Dr. Eileen Burry, and it's a very big honor to have her here on the show. For more than 20 years, Dr. Eileen Burry has been on the front lines of forgiveness, from the personal to the political. As a political psychologist, Dr. Burry helps to rebuild war-torn countries such as Liberia, Nepal, Pakistan, India, Israel, and the occupied territories. Her work focuses on reconciling centuries of old conflict and finding ways to forgive. She understands the deep-down psychological issues surrounding conflict and the healing of conflict. She helps rebuild countries by ending the cycles of abuse and revenge, which in some cases began centuries ago. She helps people living in emerging democracies to think about the issues needed to be grappled with in order to set up reconciliation processes, such as truth and reconciliation commissions within their countries. She also designs regional and national dialogue processes, which help emerging democracies heal from the wounds of the past and find the best possible and peaceful future. She leads the charge by training other high-profile people, such as diplomats, peacekeepers, and humanitarian organizations. Director of Training and Program Development for the Institute of Multi-Track Diplomacy, IMTD, whose mission is to promote a systems-based approach to international peace building and to transform deep-rooted social conflict through the education, conflict resolution, training, and communication, Dr. Boris has been to Peru working with the Schools of Forgiveness and Reconciliation, so she understands quite well the situation in the country. Please help me welcome Dr. Eileen Burry to our show. Hello, Eileen.
Hello, how are you?
Hola, dear. How are you doing today?
I'm doing so fine, thank you, and it's such a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me.
It's a big honor for us to have you here. Thank you very much for being here with us. So I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about your work, about who you are and what have you been doing until now?
Sure. I am a clinical and political psychologist, and as you mentioned in the introduction, I'm also the director of training for the Institute for Multi-Track Diplomacy. And the real passion of my work, I develop international training programs in conflict resolution, forgiveness, and reconciliation. And I go to areas of conflict and war zones to help people heal the wounds of war and to be able to finally come together in a healing capacity so they're then able to start to resolve their conflicts with one another to help people who have been victims and perpetrators in war and genocide learn to live side by side with one another through the work of forgiveness and reconciliation, and then to be able to give them skills in how to resolve their conflicts so they can switch and change their culture, which is usually a culture of violence, to a culture of peace.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and how do you do that?
Well, part of my work involves training in forgiveness and reconciliation, and part of it involves training in conflict resolution. So there is a training program that I have developed in forgiveness that I'll go to countries and I work with usually governments foreign service ministries, ministries of foreign affairs, and I work with the different countries to take a look at what is their histories and how can I best serve them. And then I develop a program around the histories and the needs of the country to help teach people about forgiveness, help them go through their own personal processes of healing so they can come together with groups that they might have considered enemies in the past, but who they want to learn to work with now. And so people go through the training programs of forgiveness and reconciliation. And for those who are interested, they can become facilitators and go into their own villages and communities and teach forgiveness and reconciliation. And then I also continue this work with people who are interested in now giving them skills in conflict resolution. So now that they've been able to heal at least partially from the wounds of conflict and war, they're now able to hear one another. And in that process, they're able to start to work with one another and develop reconciliation processes and conflict resolution processes to help them resolve the conflicts that's been between them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, when I was in Peru, I was working with a wonderful organization which supports schools for forgiveness and reconciliation. And by the way, while I was in Peru, I met such wonderful, wonderful Peruvians, all of whom were involved with Schools for Forgiveness and Reconciliation, who went through an 80-hour training program as part of this Schools for Forgiveness and Reconciliation, became facilitators, amiadores, and they are now going into their communities. And for those in their communities and villages who are interested in healing from forgiveness, they then replicate the program. And this way, many, many people can be touched by the work of forgiveness and reconciliation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. First of all, thanks for talking so nicely about Peru and about people in Peru. I was also checking your website, and there were some things that you were saying there that called our attention. The topic for today is called political relationships are about people. And we would like now to go further into what relationships are about, you know, because political relationship is usually has to do with dealing with people, you know, and the same happens in every level when we talk about relationships in general. So could you tell us a little bit about what you think about relationships?
Well, that's a wonderful question, because one of the things that I always talk about is forgiveness from the personal to the political. That mm-hmm. That there are many different kinds of relationships. There's relationships with ourselves. There's relationship with each other. And then there are relationships that go beyond our immediate circle of family and friends to our community and to our nation. And even though we have these different kinds of relationships, they are all relationships that require the same kinds of nurturing and support. So, for example, if we have hurt ourselves, we need to do our own inner healing. We have to take a look at what our emotions are telling us, our anger, our fear, our guilt. And we need to make the changes that usually these messengers are trying to tell us. Mm-hmm. That is also true when we are in relationship with one another. That if you do something to me, and I respond to you and hurt you and upset you and make you angry, we both need to take a look at that and look within ourselves to see what are our emotions doing. And we have to begin to learn how to walk in each other's shoes. So, for example, if someone has hurt me badly, I need to ask the question, what has happened in their lives that has created so much pain that has brought them to the place they are today, which has hurt me? And the same thing is true with nations and with communities, that when groups of people hurt other groups of people, there is a reason behind it, and there's pain behind it. And so we have to take a look at the historical context. And, you know, I can probably use the example of the Rwandan genocide. And here we all know that terrible, terrible things happened in Rwanda with the Hutus and the Tutsis. And we can say the Hutus, you know, killed 800,000 to a million Tutsis. And yet they were indoctrinated to a great degree by their own leaders, kill or be killed. Well, that kind of thinking and that kind of anger and hatred didn't come out of a vacuum. It came from somewhere. And when you begin to look at the history, you can begin to see there's cycles of oppression and being oppressed. And they went back and forth between both groups for many, many generations. And so those are the relationships that also need to be healed. It's the same kind of dynamic. So, again, if you and I, or if I begin with myself and I see some of the things that I've done that I wish I could change or do differently, and learn to forgive myself and learn the process of forgiveness, then if someone does something to me, I can also learn the process of how to forgive them. And we take that knowledge and we take that discipline into our communities, into the groups that we identify ourselves with, into our nation. And therefore, whenever we learn something on the personal, when we can practice that, that discipline, and learn how to extend ourselves to the personal, then we can also learn how to extend ourselves to situations in the political realm.
Mm-hmm. What you say is very interesting. I resonate a lot with what you're saying because actually I worked, prior to doing what I do now, I worked 13 years in international relations. And after working with people from all around the world, you know, in different countries, I came to understand exactly what you're saying, that in the end it's always about two people, you know, and about what these people have in their backpack. And that's the reason why they are reacting the way they are reacting. So after all these years working, you know, in like different kinds of business with different kinds of people from, you know, all around, it was interesting to see that everybody was after the same thing, you know, experiencing love and finding different ways to feel loved. And for people, it's like, everybody has different idea of what love is for them, but they're still searching for the thing, you know? So after working all these years, I started to work into becoming a healer, which is something I had a passion for since I was very, very little. But I understood that I had to feel this and to live all this to be able to understand how the human being reacts and how the human being thinks, you know. And then I started, of course, studying all the things that I studied afterwards to become a healer and the teacher that I am now. But it's very interesting what you say because I felt the same thing, you know. I also felt that it's all about how we live our lives and how we react to the things that that happen around us. So we can react in a different way to the same thing, depending on what we have lived before and what we have to learn as well. So I was also checking your website, and there are some phrases that you put here that really called my attention. So, for example, you were talking about, and you were saying here in your website again, that sometimes we have to deal with a lot of pain, right? So we have to deal with a lot of anger and with a lot of pain. So what do you suggest people to do in these cases?
Well, you know, that too is an interesting question. And one of the reasons I think this that humanity is grappling so hard to live in peace with one another is that we cannot escape doing our own personal inner work, which means that we cannot escape dealing with our pain. Mm-hmm. And nobody really wants to go there. It's much easier to say that the person next to me is the problem, or the group next to me is the problem, instead of looking at ourselves. The paradox is, when we decide to absorb the pain, we decide to say, okay, something horrific has happened to me, and yes, it has made me angry, but I'm willing to deal with it now. As soon as we make that decision to deal with it, we're beginning to walk through the door, and that's how we deal with our pain. We first take a look at what are we really, really feeling, and very often there's a component of anger, and we can always justify our anger, but holding on to our anger and blaming someone else, is that going to really get us what we want? And the answer is no. We have disempowered ourselves. When we can say, okay, what is the anger trying to tell me? There's always a message, and it's always about something needs to change, either something outside of ourselves or something within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And anger is a real slippery snake in a way, because if we're having a hard time letting go of it, that means we're secretly accusing ourselves of something. And so what we need to do is to ask ourselves, what am I accusing the other of? And of course, whatever it is that we're accusing them of, we're not doing that in our own lives in the same way. But we may be doing it in another way. We could be accusing someone of really being insensitive to us and attacking us for no good reason. But the truth of the matter is, we in our daily lives attack others for no good reason. And if we can honor that and say, okay, you know something? If I were put in that same situation, I might not act much differently. Then we begin our own healing process. And that's not to let somebody off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Because those people who've done something to us need to take responsibility. What it does do is help us lessen our own emotional pain and begin to see the situation differently, not from anger, but from understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And when we can do that, we are releasing our anger and we are releasing our pain. Now, mm-hmm. very often when things are very tragic and traumatic, not only is there anger that we need to work with, we need to work with our guilt. And we need to recognize that we haven't done anything wrong and that holding on to our guilt is a choice too. And mm-hmm. we also usually have to mourn our loss. It might be the loss of a loved one. It might be the loss of our innocence. It might be the loss of the way we thought the world should be. But in the process of mourning, of letting go, of crying, of letting it all go, that's when we walk through the door and we're on the other side, and that's how we heal our pain. And once we heal our pain, we begin to see the world differently.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you were talking earlier about the things that you have done in the past and working with in international relations and the process of healing, what forgiveness really does ultimately is to change the way we think. And we are at a point in humanity right now where we are needing to change our consciousness and see the world differently. And I think forgiveness is the pivotal point for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right. But there are some times when people, for example, you know, you have been here in Peru. And, for example, we're a country that has suffered a lot because of terrorism, for example. And because of different political governments that have sometimes taken certain decisions that the people were not very, were not agreeing with, you know. So So Peru is a country that considers itself to be a very, suffering country. And in my private practice, I've seen that sometimes it's very difficult, for the people to decide that they want to forgive something, because sometimes the anger and the pain are so big that, first of all, they can't quite control it. And then second, it's something that they've lived that's so, so difficult for them to process that sometimes they just don't want to start a forgiveness process. What would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I would tell them that it's okay not to forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds a little bit strange, but I think it's important to let people know that they have choice, because in that choice is their power. So I tell them that they don't need to forgive, and that they need that there's that it's understandable that they're so angry because they've been hurt, and it takes a while to deal with the anger. But I will also then say to them, if you want to let go of your emotional baggage, you may want to consider having at least a little willingness to forgive. And you have to respect people's timing, because as you mentioned, some things are just so painful that it takes a long time to even get a hold of that, to wrap yourself around all the horrific things that have happened. And it takes time. And this is a process that cannot be rushed. But I also tell people that in your heart of hearts, even if you're struggling with forgiveness, if you really want to forgive, you will get the help you need. And I'm talking now in a spiritual way. And I've seen it over and over again that when people say, okay, my family, they all disappeared. I don't know where they went. I know that they were killed. How do you forgive something like that? My whole family is gone, and I'm now left living a life without them. And that is so incredibly painful. And you need to mourn that loss. You cannot skip any steps. But if you also recognize that forgiveness isn't about the people who killed your family, but forgiveness is about your own inner healing. It's about releasing your pain, your emotional baggage. If you really can understand what forgiveness is about, then it helps you be more open to the process. And when you also begin to take a look at what was going on in the lives of those that did this terrible atrocity, what has happened in their lives that created so much pain that they did what they did, then at least you begin to grow an understanding, which helps in your own healing process. And the other piece I always remind people is that just because you forgive, it doesn't mean that those people that you have just forgiven aren't to be held accountable, that they need to take responsibility for what they've done. And so when people really, really understand that forgiveness is about their inner healing, it's not about letting somebody off the hook. It's about them being able to work through their emotions and to heal their emotions so they can see the situation in a different way, which will enable them to have peace of mind, and that forgiveness is for them, then it becomes easier to forgive.
So would you say that to achieve forgiveness, we have to experience compassion?
I think part of the forgiveness process helps us learn how to grow in compassion.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens as we, I have people tell their stories. And it's usually the first thing is what I call the survivor story. You're here with me today. You have survived something. In many cases, it could be something very horrific. In other cases, it may be something with your best friend. Whatever it is, it has caused you pain. You have told me the story. And then what I ask people to do is to tell me what emotions come up as they tell their stories. And of course, as I mentioned earlier, you're dealing with a lot of anger, you're dealing with a lot of fear, you can be dealing with guilt, and you're dealing a lot with mourning. And so I help people go through those emotions. And we work with anger quite extensively because anger is an important messenger. And it's there for a reason, many times to protect us and always to teach us. And so it's important for us to try to listen to what anger is trying to tell us. And as we begin to work through that, people begin to stop, they stop asking the question, why me? Why did this happen to me? And they begin to ask the question, why them? What has happened to them that has brought them to where they are today? And when you begin to start asking those questions, then you're beginning to grow in understanding and compassion. And that is the process that begins to help us change the way we think. And then our stories begin to change. And now it's moving from a story that is a survivor story to a story that is the thriver story. Because now we're able to start to let go of our emotional pain, our emotional baggage, and begin to reengage in life in a much fuller and more loving way. And so our stories begin to shift, and we begin to create a new history for ourselves. And that's what becomes important, especially when you go into areas where there's been a lot of conflict and war. You know, I think of what has happened in South Africa, and we had all of the apartheid history at being part of South African history. And then came the time in 1994, the end of apartheid, when Nelson Mandela becomes president and the formation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Well, then part of their newer history was the telling of the stories and of the forgiveness and in some cases of reconciliation. That became part of the history too, and the story became a bigger story. It now became a healing story. Mm-hmm. And so that's the kind of work we do in forgiveness, from the personal to the political.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is the role of anxiety in all this?
The role of society?
Anxiety.
Of anxiety. Anxiety to me is, in a sense, a form of anger. There is something there that is making us feel very uncomfortable. And that, too, is telling us there's something we need to look at. Something is not balanced within ourselves. And so what is it that we need to deal with to make a change? Now, sometimes we're in situations that are dangerous. And so it's natural to have anxiety. And so the question really becomes, how can we deal with these situations that we still feel place us in danger and have peace of mind? And that's a whole other issue, and I don't know if that's what you were referring to, but we have to decide where can we go to feel safe? Because usually anxiety is also telling us we need to have a safe haven. And that safe haven could be, how do we slow ourselves down and get in touch with our inner selves, taking those deep breaths, recognizing our spiritual strength within ourselves and being in touch with it.
How do we recognize that?
Our spiritual strength?
Yes.
I think we all have it. I know we all have spiritual strength.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have spiritual practices where they sit in silence and prayer and they can feel the presence of something greater than themselves. Some people find it through meditation. It is a philosophy that people hold. And so I think the way we find it is we begin to question what is really, really important in our lives. What is really the most important thing? And actually, the music that you played before the interview began really said it all. It's really a time to love. It's really a time to make a choice. And so if we can recognize that the greatest thing in this world is the power of love, then we've also gotten in touch with our spiritual source.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say to people that feel that they've been betrayed, that they are holding all this resentment inside?
Well, there again, I would have them go through this whole process that we've talked about and really listen to their story of betrayal. And I would probably also remind everyone, and this is an unfortunate truth, I wish it wasn't, but we all at one point in our lives have been betrayed. And that we need to recognize that this is part of our human existence. And that betrayal is very painful. And betrayal runs deep. Mm-hmm. But that the reason why we've been betrayed isn't about us. It's about the woundedness of the person or the people who have done this to us. And if we can recognize that, then we've made a step. Because people who are feeling healthy and whole, who recognize the spiritual essence of each and every one of us, would not inflict pain. The people who have been hurt themselves, who are wounded themselves, that go and hurt others. And if we can recognize that, sometimes really understanding the pain that they've gone through is enough to disarm our anger so we can move forward in our own healing process.
Among the things that you do, I know that you're also a practitioner of marriage and relationship counseling. So can you tell us a little bit about what you've seen in that area?
You know, it's interesting. The same dynamics that we've just been talking about get played out in any kind of relationship. And actually, one of the reasons why I've chosen to work with people who are having relationship difficulties, there are also people who are having marital problems, who are dealing with separation and divorce. They're dealing with the same kinds of things. They're dealing with the same kinds of shadow issues that get played out in a marriage as what gets played out in a community. And so I really help people understand that and help them work through the pain that they're going through because of being betrayed, because of infidelity. And I give them the space to really talk about what has happened to them and how it's affected them and how it's hurt them, and to help them work through the emotions. A lot of times in marriage, when there is something like betrayal or infidelity or a lack of intimacy or even poor communication, people are wounded. And so I help whoever has come to me, sometimes it's one spouse or the other, or sometimes both people come to me. I help them begin to, first of all, get in touch with what has happened to them to help them heal, and then to help them get into understanding the woundedness of their partner so they can understand their partner better and understand the behavior. Again, it doesn't excuse it. It just helps us learn how to deal with it in a way that helps us let go of our own emotional baggage. And when we can do that, we can see the situation more clearly. Once people work through their anger, then their motivation in dealing with the other person changes. They're not dealing with the other person in anger to get back at them necessarily. They're dealing with the other person as another human being and are now better able to ascertain, what do we do in this relationship? Is there enough here that we can work on it together and move forward? Or would it be better for both of us if we go our separate ways? But there's a greater clarity of thought that people experience once they've done their own healing to know what to do with one another. And oftentimes also, it deals with perhaps communication skills that they're not aware of. You know, unfortunately, we don't get marriage 101 in high school or college. We don't learn communication skills 101. How do we talk to one another? You know, and so a lot of times people just don't have the skills. And then what happens is they begin to argue and things get compounded and then they're angry with one another and then they say, well, so-and-so can't do this and that. And as I help people understand one another more and help people develop better communication skills, a lot of times that's what's needed to improve the marriage. And that's why I also said earlier in our conversation that what I do, even on a political level, is I do that healing component, but a lot of times we'll have the conflict resolution component as well to give people skills to understand what creates conflict, how do we deal with it, how do we improve our communication skills, our listening skills, our cross-cultural communication skills, so we can improve our relationships. And so you have all these different levels of things going on in relationships, and especially in marriage, relationships can become very complex.
Mm-hmm. Right. Talking about communication, mainly everybody has problems with dealing with specific things, and so sometimes we avoid confrontation, so we hinder our communication capacities. According to the person, we might hide ourselves in different things. Sometimes it's food, sometimes it's drugs, sometimes it's alcohol. What would you say to these people or to everybody when we are experiencing something like this?
Well, now you're talking about usually some kind of addiction. And
mm-hmm.
any kind of addiction, be it drugs, food, alcohol, oftentimes it's one way to deal with stress,
mm-hmm.
deal with our pain, deal with the way we feel about ourselves, but we don't want to deal with those things, so we cover it up with something that makes us feel better.
Right, it has to do with like escaping our ability to communicate, you know. Instead of communicating what's happening, sometimes we prefer to avoid that and put ourselves in this addiction patterns.
Right, because we don't want to deal with our own pain. We're afraid to take a look at ourselves. You know, we could be in a relationship with someone and we may not feel very good about who we are in ourselves, but instead of looking at that and getting the help we need and dealing with it, even talking to our spouse about it, we might be too ashamed or too embarrassing. And I see quite a bit of this lately in my own private practice with couples that, for example, one spouse who might have been used to working has lost their job. And they feel terrible about it because they want to be the breadwinner. They want to be able to contribute to the family, but now they can't because of the economic downturn. And it's very hard to find another job. They might be unemployed for months and months and still can't find a job. But instead of being able to really talk about that, or they might even try to talk about it, but the spouse may not be receptive and not being able to hear it, they go out and drink instead and try to cover up how they're feeling because they're feeling so bad. Or a spouse could hurt the other spouse, and the one who's been hurt may try to say something about it but can't. And so they run out the door, and they do something that could be hurtful again to their spouse, and they might get drunk, they might come home late, they might be going to bars that they shouldn't be going to. All kinds of things get played out because we don't listen enough to one another and we don't feel safe enough or good enough about ourselves to talk to one another. And I'm seeing a lot of that now in the U.S. because of so many people struggling, especially financially.
Mm-hmm. You also wrote a couple of books. The first one is called Forgiveness, The Ultimate Freedom, which we've placed it in our Blog Talk Radio show. So if anybody who's listening would like to buy it, you can purchase it by clicking on the icon of the book, and you will be redirected to an Amazon link where you can buy it. And you also wrote another book, which is called Finding Forgiveness, a 7-step program for letting go of anger and bitterness. What can you tell us about your books?
Well, the first book I bought, and interestingly enough, the people in Europe were more interested in it than the U.S. because it really looks at not only forgiveness, and there's wonderful forgiveness stories in that book. It talks a little bit more about forgiveness on the political level. And for me, I love working with forgiveness, as we've been talking about this entire interview, from the personal to the political. And my passion is not only to help people individually learn how to forgive so their lives are so much better, it's to help political leaders, it's to help governments learn the importance of forgiveness as a healing mechanism to bring peace in their own countries. So the first book dealt a little bit more with that. And the second book, Finding Forgiveness, which is the one that's easier to find, is a self-help book. And it includes the same stories that the first book had. And it also describes a step-by-step program, a 7-step program on how to forgive. And there's rating scales, there's visualization exercises, there's journaling exercises in the book to help people go through their own personal forgiveness process. And then after the first chapter really defines what forgiveness is, and one of the things that I have seen is that if people don't really understand what forgiveness is about, that can hinder them in being able to forgive. So the first chapter really goes into what forgiveness is and what forgiveness is not. And then the second chapter goes into the different steps of the forgiveness process. And then the subsequent chapters, each chapter is one of the major stories which illustrates each of the steps that were discussed in Chapter 2 on how to forgive. And so you see how people have struggled with each step and how they were able to get through that step and what did they do and how did they do it. And the stories in the book are, they range from people who could be your next-door neighbor to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who also shares his struggles with forgiveness and what does forgiveness mean from his perspective as a Buddhist monk. Mm-hmm. And so that's what Finding Forgiveness is really all about. And also, just for you to know that on my website, you can also get the book, and you can also get a healing handbook and journal where you can go into more depth on journaling what your process is with more examples and with more writing in the journal, plus a forgiveness visualization, which is on a CD, which will help take you through a visualization on how to forgive someone. So if there's someone you want to forgive and you want to go through a visualization to help you do that, that's a CD. And then another CD is on how to calm your mind, because we have to bring down our stress level to be able to do our inner work. And it's a meditation. It follows your breathing. And it's a very peaceful one. So for people who are dealing with stress or anxiety or who want to just have more peace in their mm-hmm. lives, that CD would be very, very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for letting us know. And we are within the last 5 minutes of the show. So I was wondering if you would like to make a final statement.
Yes, I would. And this really speaks to the passion of why I'm so motivated about forgiveness and the reasons that it touches me so deeply. I want to share this one last thought. I was reading a wonderful book called Into the Light by Dr. John Lerner. And in his book, and Dr. Lerner works, by the way, in a hospice unit of the Medical Center of Houston, he writes about ordinary people who selflessly shared their last days telling stories of their pre-death experiences because they had come into this hospice. And so in his book, Dr. Loomer, the stories that he writes about include the heartfelt accounts of what he describes as God's love, as told by a 9-year-old boy, a murderer, a drug user, an atheist, and a German Nazi, which were not only mystifying, but they were very healing and uplifting. Dr. Loomer's conversation with his hospice patients, who were just at the border between life and death, gives us all something to think about. Because the messages which all these people experienced from their pre-death experiences were all the same. They all talked in depth about the importance for self-love and self-forgiveness, and to have loving relationships while here on earth. They also brought home the message that what keeps us from experiencing unconditional love is the unhealed guilt which we carry within ourselves. And so the more we can heal our guilt and forgive ourselves and others, the more peacefully our lives will end. And they remind us that everyone here has a purpose, and that purpose is to learn how to love unconditionally and to forgive. And that unconditional love and random acts of kindness raise the level of humanity and spiritual growth for our planet and the universe. And I feel that we're on the threshold of a new stage of development. And the person who I think says this best is Greg Braden in his book, Walking Between Worlds. And he says, without exception, every event, every relationship, every love, and every betrayal that you have ever experienced have provided you key emotions and feelings leading to your mastery. How you perceive those emotions and feelings, how you define them in your life, is your way of training and teaching yourself, reminding yourself of the promise of compassion. So in other words, we are the ones who determine how much anger and hatred we will experience in our lives, as well as how much compassion and forgiveness we will extend to others. We all have been given opportunities to hate and the wisdom to transcend our hate. And we've all been given opportunities to take our personal power and move beyond the old choices and to respond to life from a place of spiritual wisdom. And our pain and our suffering provides us with the chance to learn how to forgive and to know our truest, most beautiful nature. Forgiveness is the gift given to us to transcend our darkness, and like alchemy, turns it to gold.
Thank you very much, Eileen. It has been a real pleasure to have you here with us. The interview has been very enlightening, and I have resonated with mainly everything you said, and I'm sure that all the people that are listening and that will be listening to the show in on demand, under our on-demand show will also feel the same. Because from everything that you said, from the, you know, the way that you said it and the voice that you have, it really is a very integral message, you know. So we're very, very happy to have you here, and we're very honored as well to be able to share your light with all the people that choose to listen to the show.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity. I care so much about forgiveness, and I just feel so honored that you have invited me, and thank you for spreading these such important messages about forgiveness. Thank you so much.
Thank you, dear, and hope we can have you again.
Oh, I would love that.
Take care and have a very wonderful day.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.